well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking with Chris Cox. He has a new group, Secure Our Freedom Alliance. They are on the air in a couple of states, but as you'll learn from Chris, this is not a flash in the pan. This is not a short-term project here. Looks like this is a group that may be around for a while. So what is their mission? What are they hoping to accomplish, both in the short term and in the long term? We got into that with Chris. Now, I will tell you right up front that during this conversation, we focused on the present. We focused on the future. I did not open the can of worms, but I did ask Chris if he would come back to talk about NRA and his thoughts on the organization at some point in the future. So looking forward to that conversation as well. But today we're talking about Secure Our Freedom Alliance and what they are hoping to do to secure our Second Amendment freedoms. Take a look and a listen. Chris, thanks so much for joining me on the program. It's good to see you, sir. It has been a while.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute, but the threats continue. The fight goes on, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on and visit with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I guess the big question is, what is the goal of this new organization? What are you hoping to do?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. When I look back over the last few years, this isn't a new conversation. This is a conversation that a lot of people have been having for a long time now. And that's, are we having the right conversations to win the hearts and minds of the American people at the right times when it comes to our right to defend ourselves with a firearm? So the goal here is to not tell no about the flood. We do a great job of that. The goal here is not to form circular firing squads. We do a pretty good job of that on our side. The goal here is to go out to these 20 million plus new gun owners that have bought for the first time since COVID and go where they are. We know they skew women. We know they skew minority. And who's having those conversations? Who's reminding them of the importance of why they chose to buy a gun for the first time? They didn't choose to buy a gun to go hunting, very rarely. They didn't buy a gun for collecting or for target shooting. They bought because they want to be able to defend themselves. God forbid they ever need to do it. And so this is about going out, winning the hearts and minds of the American people and reminding them of why this God-given right to protect ourselves is so important. That's what we're aiming to do.
Is this a mission you think will continue after the election, or is this something that, almost a pop-up? We've got pop-up restaurants and things like that. Is this sort of a pop-up Second Amendment group, or do you have long-term plans for this?
You know, the long-term plan is to fill the gaps that are out there. If we're being honest with each other and we look out at the Second Amendment community and the advocacy efforts at large, you have to be honest enough to say there's a lot of work that's not being done. And it's not being done right now. Are the elections important? No question about it. But the Second Amendment is going to be under attack for the foreseeable future, if not forever. So no, this is not a one and done operation. I have enough things to do in my personal and professional life than to stay busy for a few months. I'm doing this because there are patriots out there who share the concerns that I've had for years, which is we're not doing the job that the Second Amendment deserves. We're not doing the job that gun owners respect and need. And so if I can lend my background and skill set to help move the ball forward and secure this freedom for future generations, including my own kids, then that's what I'm going to do.
So where do you think the Second Amendment community is failing? I mean, you talk again about, you know, not reaching these new gun owners. And certainly there is a difference, right? But not every gun owner is a Second Amendment advocate. Kamala Harris claims to be a gun owner. Tim Walz claims to be a gun owner. But I would not call them Second Amendment advocates, right?
No. And that's part of the problem that we have is we have to recognize that there's people who've made the decision to engage culturally, but they're not ready to engage politically yet. And are there voices and are there brands that they're open to listening to? And are there brands that they're not open to listen to? I've probably studied, and I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but I've probably studied gun owners in this country more than anyone else has over the last 20 or 30 years, including in the last 4 or 5 years post-COVID. We know who these new gun owners are. We know what they look like. We need to hunt where the ducks are. We need to go to where they are. We need to engage them in conversations that they're comfortable with. And we know that at the end of the day, this right of self-defense is the moral high ground that we all live by. This is what this freedom is about, the right to defend ourselves. And so we're going to go out there and do the job that's not being done. There are groups doing a fantastic job. I mentioned this earlier last week. Second Amendment Foundation, we've talked about their work for years. They're doing a great job in the legal arena. And I think the work they're doing is more important now than maybe ever. There's groups out there protecting our hunting heritage. SCI, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, again, doing great jobs. California Rifle Pistol Association. There's a lot of groups doing a good job. But if we were all doing the job that we needed, we wouldn't be facing the threats that we're facing. We wouldn't be seeing our political capital slip. We wouldn't be seeing the support for the gun control community's agenda increase. So clearly, we've got to do more to win the hearts and minds of the American people. And again, the right people in the right place in the right time. And that's not a short-term operation. That's a long-term goal.
You know, it sounds like, I mean, we talk a lot about litigation at Bearing Arms, legislation, regulation. But we also do talk about, you know, the cultural attacks on gun ownership, right? And on our Second Amendment rights. Not far from where I live in rural Central Virginia, Fluvanna County, there's a fall fundraiser at a local elementary school, and a company called Red Arrow wanted to put together a little gift basket, right, with some like logo t-shirts and things of that nature. Some parents got upset because Red Arrow is a gun maker. That's one of the things that they do, right? They also have Red Arrow TV. So they go to the local school board complaining, we got to pull this, gift. It's inappropriate for anything having to do with firearms to be affiliated in any way with the school district. Is that the type of stuff that you're talking about? Again, not just this 50,000 foot level of we've got to elect the right candidates, but even we have to push back against the demonization and the denormalization of gun ownership and gun owners.
Cam, you and I have been talking literally for 20 years about the culture war that we are engaged in. And that culture war is very real and arguably raging even harder than it has in the past. And what we're seeing is a concerted effort. It's not just with gun owners. We've seen it with the law enforcement community. Like, let's go in and plant that seed of doubt so law enforcement officers aren't sure if, God forbid, they have to use and discharge a firearm in the line of duty, that they're going to end up in jail. They're trying to do the same thing with gun ownership. You see it with this, you know, parents who are failing, these parents of these kids that are out there committing these horrific events. They failed those kids long before those kids went out and pulled the trigger on a firearm illegally. They failed them throughout. But now you're seeing this effort to, well, let's go in and plant the seed of doubt with parents that it's no longer worth, you know, teaching your kids safe and responsible gun ownership. It's no longer worth owning a firearm. So I think this is all part of a concerted effort to change culture so they can change politics, so they can then change policy. And if they can't do it long term, they're going to try to do it short term with every trick in the book. So this is a conversation that, yes, it's a 50,000 foot level conversation, and we need to continue to tell everyone we can about the importance of these freedoms. But we have to take this down to the local level. We have to take this down to individual gun owners. We have to take this down to anyone who's willing to have a conversation with their neighbors about why this matters, why this is important. I mean, I see more reasons now to own firearms and carry firearms than in any other part of my lifetime. I mean, sure, there's moments where, you know, things concern you, but when you see this government failing to keep us safe, you see this government failing to address the underlying problems, and then people wonder why you and I go out and purchase firearms, and then a bunch of people who live, you know, very different from you and I, maybe they live in a high crime area, maybe they live in the middle of a city and don't have, you know, they have bars on their windows and not gates around their communities. Yeah, they wonder why people are exercising this freedom. They're doing it for two reasons. One, the government's failing to keep them safe. And two, they recognize that at the end of the day, it's their ability and their responsibility to protect themselves and protect their families. And if we're not out there constantly reminding people of why that's important, even if it's after horrific events, when the knee-jerk reaction is always to overreact, the knee-jerk reaction, while it's logical to say, what do we do? How can we do something different? Who can we blame, or what can we blame? Those aren't illogical conversations. You and I might not agree where, you know, that line of thinking goes, but it's fair for people to ask those questions. What's not fair is for the blame to be put on law-abiding gun owners and people who own guns safely and responsibly and use them and carry them for self-defense. That's not acceptable. It's continuing to move in the wrong direction. And I feel there are gaps out there, and we're looking to fill those gaps.
All right. So we talked a little bit about the long-term mission here. In the short term, right, we're just a couple of months away from Election Day, less than 2 months away. So where is your focus going to be? I mean, obviously, 50 states in the union, not all of them are going to be battleground states, right? It might be important to get this message out to, let's say, California gun owners. But California, that's going to go for Kamala Harris in November, right? I don't think there's any doubt about that. So where are your priorities between now and Election Day?
Well, our priorities as a 501c4 are to educate people on the importance of these issues. Now, are there political messages that can be, you know, shared with people in the battleground states? Of course, there's ways to do that. But this is not a political action committee. There are other political action committees that I think you're going to see a lot more out of. I'm going to be involved in those efforts, as you can imagine. But this is about going out to the places where it matters and talking about the issues that matter. And the Second Amendment, it should matter. And the impact that these elections could have on the Supreme Court should matter. And the fact that the Democrats want to change the filibuster if they maintain control of the Senate, I mean, those are things that are critically important and things that we're going to be out talking about, not only between now and Election Day, but well beyond.
Are there any issues that you don't think are resonating with these new gun owners? Are there things that are, I don't want to say a distraction, but you know, again, I mean, if you're a new gun owner, as you say, you're interested in protecting yourself, you're interested in protecting your family. You may not be thinking about things like, all right, well, how would the ATF's rule on unfinished frames and receivers, impact me? How would, the Rahimi case impact me down the line? What are there certain things that when you've been, talking to gun owners and studying gun owners, particularly, again, these new gun owners, are there certain issues that you think resonate more with these folks?
Yeah, Cam, that's a really important question, and I appreciate you asking it. These are first-time gun owners. Like, yes, some of them have grown up around firearms. Maybe some of them have just made a decision because they moved out of their parents' house, or they got married, or they got their first apartment. There's all sorts of reasons that they're coming to the conclusion that they need to own a firearm. It's primarily and overwhelmingly to defend themselves because they know that it's ultimately up to them. But these are people who have engaged culturally. So to think that they know about these critically important Supreme Court cases and lower court cases, they don't. It's part of our job to welcome people and to let them know that they have a place where they can be part of a conversation about the things that they care about. Does that make the other issues any less important? Of course not. Are we going to lead this effort in a principled way with unapologetic support for the Second Amendment? Of course, I wouldn't be involved in it if that wasn't the case. But yes, you are absolutely right. There are issues that they don't care about yet. And we need to truthfully, Kim, make sure they stay with us just on the top line level of self-defense. I mean, these are people who maybe their friends are giving them a hard time because they purchased a firearm. You know, a lot of these people's first exposure to firearms wasn't the way we were exposed. I mean, I was exposed with my father taking my brothers and I out and teaching us about safe and responsible gun ownership. My first semi-auto rifle was a Mini 14 when I was 12 years old, and I got two cases of ammo. It was the coolest thing ever. A lot of these first-time gun owners, their first exposure was they know someone who was killed. Like, this is a very different group of people, and that if this truly is a civil right and this truly is an effort where we want people to feel welcomed and we're going to fight for people regardless of what they look like or where they live, then that's the way we have to approach it. And that's certainly the way we're approaching it in this effort.
You know, 15 years ago, 25% of the Democrats in Congress were A-rated by the NRA. I don't think there is a single one that is A-rated now. How much of a challenge is that too? Because it does seem like, and listen, I mean, I'm a conservative, but like you, the Second Amendment is a right for all, right? That's the way I view it. It's the right of people who disagree with me politically, people who think differently than I do about religion, about any issue that you want to bring up. This is a right of we the people. And that doesn't just mean we the people we agree with.
You know, Cam, I view this very, very simply, constitutional freedoms can't live or die based on how the political winds are blowing, because both parties are equally capable of screwing up a free lunch. No question about it. And so tax policy, yeah, Democrats get in control, you kind of expect your taxes are going to go up. Republicans go in control, you're kind of hoping that your taxes get lower. But we don't have the luxury as Second Amendment supporters and people who believe in this freedom that, well, if Democrats win, we're just going to lose it. Because you and I both know, because we followed this for the last 30 years, most of our adult lives, that once you lose it, it's almost impossible to get back. And our opponents are well-funded. They have the media behind them. You see them when they're not winning in Congress, they're in the state legislatures. When they're not winning in the state legislatures, they're abusing the court system. None of that has changed. So we have a job to do, and you know, we don't have a lot of time to do it, but we have to be able. Democrat Party left gun owners. It wasn't the other way around. There are plenty of Democrat gun owners out there who are scratching their head saying, I can't vote for Kamala Harris, or I can't vote for, you know, Joe Manchin or whoever it might be, or not Joe Manchin anymore, but John Tester or whoever it might be, because I don't trust them to protect my right to defend myself. Like, it should be a litmus test. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party years ago started moving away. They started moving away from the Second Amendment, and that political divide long term does not help us. Should we be sellouts to the Democrat Party who hates this freedom? No, of course not. But we should work with anyone, and we should reach out to anyone who's willing to have a conversation about any issue that involves firearms. Our job is not to just point the finger. Our job is to win the hearts and minds. And it's a lot more. It's easy to sit on the sidelines and throw bombs. It's easy to be up in the bleachers in the arena versus down on the Coliseum floor fighting. And we do a good job of that in our community, of sniping at each other and criticizing, you know, how we get there when we're all trying to get to the same place.
I think it's right. I think it's, you know, the philosophy of the right to keep your arms. I'm a Second Amendment absolutist, but I'm also a political realist, right? And the world that we live in, we don't have majority support for, making machine guns protected, right? Getting rid of the NFA, those things. There's just not the political support there. If you want to get to that point, then as you say, I think it's important you start with the people who are gun owners. And you start to talk to them as gun owners, but you don't shame them, right? You don't say, well, why you're an idiot for not believing this, or you're a sellout, you're a Zumbo, right? There are guys, and listen, the gun control groups are very effective about this. Holy cow. They love getting gun owners who support red flag laws or universal background checks, even if they don't support a ban on so-called assault weapons, right? If they can get a gun owner to sign on to 50% of their agenda, that's a win for them. 20%, that's a win. They can still use that and say, well, look, this person believes in these moderate common sense steps, right? I think that's an issue that we have within the Second Amendment community. If somebody is not with us 100%, somebody's with us 75%, 80%, there's a tendency, I think, among some gun owners to say, well, that's not good enough, rather than say, okay, you know what, I'll meet you there. And then we'll agree on this. We'll work on these things. And you know what? I'm still going to try to persuade you on that other 20%.
And Kim, there's a natural evolution towards policy success. And we saw it with constitutional carry. Everyone points to 29 states with constitutional carry. That didn't happen overnight. That didn't just all of a sudden 29 states decided that they were going to pass constitutional carry. It's because we eliminated the bogus argument against shall issue carry, that it was going to be Wild West, shootouts in the streets, all those doomsday scenarios failed to materialize. People got more comfortable with the idea of people going through a permit process. And then we were able to change society's outlook and change the enough outlook of elected officials to start passing constitutional carry. There were people who criticized the efforts to pass shall issue, going from may issue to shall issue. I get it. I'm an absolutist as well. But do you want to win, or do you want to be in the permanent minority where you can't win anything and your political tombstone shows that you're the ones that allowed for the further erosion of our rights. That's not what I'm interested in. I know that's not what you and others are interested in. This is about winning. And we win by embracing people where they are and meeting people where they are and convincing them that no, we're the normal ones. Like we're the ones that are about safety and security and freedom. Come and listen to us. Come and join us. Come to get to know us. I think you'll like what you see.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, if folks want to be a part of this, how can they do it?
Yeah. So we just launched in July. Yeah. This has been a conversation that's been ongoing for the last several years. We've got a website, secureourfreedomalliance.com. That's going to be built out. Right now, we're focused less on spending money on websites and more on getting the right messages, as you said, to the right people in areas that are important moving forward. Follow us on Twitter. You're going to see a lot more, not only in messaging, but you're going to see a lot more in grassroots activism. I think people are going to like what they see.
Awesome. Chris, listen, I appreciate you coming on the program. I realize that our audience is probably shaking their fists at me right now, saying, why don't you ask Chris about the NRA? Will you come back at some point and we'll talk about the last 5 years? I really wanted to focus on the new group. I wanted to focus on the future and the present in this conversation. But will you come back and we can get into that stuff at some point?
I will look forward to it. In the meantime, we have a lot of work to do, not only over the next 2 months, but over the next 2 to 20 years. So look forward to coming back on. Appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and your listeners. And like I said, stay tuned. I think you're going to like what you see.
All right, Chris, thanks very much, man. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Take care. See you, buddy.
My thanks to Chris for joining us on the program. Looking forward to continuing that conversation in the future. And be sure to check out secureourfreedomalliance.org if you want to see some of the ads that are now up on the air in states around the country. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder the central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree, physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. And now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with an unbelievable situation in Arizona. Here's the headline. Victims of dinner time burglars in North Scottsdale upset. Some defendants are out of jail on probation. I would be upset. In fact, I am upset about this. I'm not a victim. I don't live in Arizona. And this is still unbelievable. So there have been KPNX in Phoenix calls a string of burglaries in high-end homes over the last few months in Phoenix. Basically, 2 to 4 people, they break into homes, they steal cash, they steal jewelry and other valuables around dinner time when they and this is a sad commentary in our society. They choose to go around dinner time when they believe that no one is home, because I guess everybody's eating out these days. Law enforcement agencies also said that the burglars are part of a South American theft group, according to KPNX. Court documents say the burglars were in the United States on travel visas and used fraudulent ID cards. So they're in this country illegally, right? They are using fake IDs to get around. In at least one case, some of the suspects apparently used a Wi-Fi and cell phone jammers to stop victims who were at home from calling 911 or to use their home security system. According to the police chief in Scottsdale, Jeff Walther, since October of last year, there have been 39 such burglaries committed by these crews, rather, about $600,000 worth of valuables taken. Throughout the Phoenix area, there have been about 140 such burglaries with about $4 million worth of valuables taken. Walther says the majority of suspects that have been identified come from Chile, which is on the visa waiver program. According to KPNX, in the past few months, a handful of suspects have been arrested, including 24-year-old Sebastian Soto, 33-year-old Gracia Costello, and 26-year-old Manuel Gomez. Arrest documents say that both Soto and Gomez are part of that transnational South American crime syndicate. They were arrested back in March after Scottsdale police were called out to reports of two men wearing hoodies with gloves that are moving through the areas. When they got there unseen, they saw a suspicious car. It was driving slowly through the neighborhood. They pulled the car over. Costello was inside. According to court documents, Costello reportedly told police that she is from Chile and was in the U.S. on a travel visa. Documents claim that Costello told investigators that she, her boyfriend, and another man were in the area to commit burglaries. Several hours later, police found Soto and a teenager hiding in the desert using a thermal detection from a police helicopter. They arrested them. They also found Chilean passports identifying the suspects. All three had charges submitted against them. They were taken to jail. Gomez was arrested separately back in February after arrest documents claimed that he and other suspects were seen by police hopping into people's backyards. Officers arrested three suspects, including Gomez, and documents say that they found tools associated with burglaries on the suspects' persons. Same paperwork also says investigators found three suspects had fraudulent ID cards with fake names and birth dates. Again, three suspects from Chile were in the U.S. on overstayed travel visas. Now, all three of these individuals were charged, right? They all three were offered plea deals. They took those plea deals, and they were recently sentenced. According to KPNX, Soto and Costello were given 6 months in jail and 2 years probation. But they got credit for time served while they were awaiting trial. So just a couple of days after they were sentenced, they were released from jail and are currently out. Gomez, given a similar sentence, 6 months, 3 years probation, but the 6 months amounted to essentially time served. So he too was released from jail. The suspects were also ordered to pay fines totaling $129. That's it. That's it. Tim Clark, who was one of the victims of these burglaries, described the sentence as horrible, said it seemed like a slap on the wrist. He says it doesn't seem like it's going to deter anybody from coming here to try this again. Huh, I think he's right. Clark says that there are other sentences that are pending for other suspects. He hopes that they will face harsher punishments. I don't know that that's going to happen. Maricopa County Attorney's Office said that for Soto and Costello, sentencing was applicable under state law because neither defendant had prior felony convictions. They didn't use weapons. They weren't in this country legally. They're not supposed to have any felony convictions. I mean, not that people who are in this country legally are supposed to have felony convictions, but you know what I mean. They didn't have a whole lot of time to get involved in the criminal justice system. Gomez, according to sentencing paperwork, was granted the sweetheart deal because of his lack of criminal history. So the 6 month jail term deemed appropriate. Tim Clark says that they need years behind bars, as well as deportation would have been more appropriate, he says, given the crimes that were committed. He also says the travel visa program needs to be reconfigured. Sentencing documents, according to KPNX, for all three defendants also state that ICE has determined that all three are in this country illegally and appear to be subject to removal proceedings. So, again, this is an issue here, right? You've got individuals who are responsible for at least some of the more than 140 burglaries that have taken place in the Phoenix area over the past year. And yet, when they were involved in the criminal justice system, what happened? Not much at all. Why offer a plea deal to begin with? I can understand the argument. I don't buy it. I can understand the argument. Well, maybe the case against them was not airtight. We wanted to spare the victims the pain of testifying about a burglary. That doesn't make much sense. Or, hey, listen, this was an easy way to get a conviction. And they probably wouldn't have been sentenced to much more time anyway had we gone to trial. If that's the case, then again, the law needs to change. Because this sentence offers no deterrent, as Tim Clark says, for this criminal syndicate to change its ways or even find another target of opportunity. Seems to me like a lesson has been learned here. And the lesson is, commit these crimes in the Phoenix area and you can get away with it. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from Chicago, where a concealed carry holder fired back after he was shot at by an attempted armed robber. According to police in Chicago, it happened around 10:45 Monday morning. 29-year-old man who has a concealed carry license standing outside. Two people opened fire in his direction, according to Chicago police. The man returned fire, striking one of the suspects. The 20-year-old offender who was shot suffered a graze wound to his abdomen. He was transported to good condition at the University of Chicago Hospital. The concealed carry holder apparently not injured in this shootout and is not currently facing charges. We don't have a lot of details about this, but it did just happen yesterday morning, so we'll see if we can find any more information as the Chicago police continue their investigation. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, when able to do the right thing. I got to give a hat tip to John Petrolino, Bearing Arms contributor, who sent this to me. He said, I don't know if this is a true good deed of the day. I said, yeah, I'm running with it just because of the headline of nothing else. Aggressive groundhog attack stopped by Ridge students' heroic actions. You truly are a hero, said Bernard's Township Mayor Asai to Caleb Morris. Now, I have dealt with groundhogs over the 12 years that I've lived here in rural Central Virginia. Haven't had any get aggressive with me. I have a rooster that's getting aggressive and about to be turned into stew, but I haven't had any deal with any aggressive groundhogs. They've been destructive, and some of them have been dispatched. My wife's actually a really good shot, but she keeps track of how many groundhogs she has taken over the 12 years that we've lived here. I've lost track. But I've never really run across an aggressive groundhog. In Baskin Ridge, New Jersey, apparently there was or is at least one. At the September 10th Bernard Township Committee meeting, Mayor Jennifer Asai honored Caleb Morris with a proclamation recognizing his actions, quote, to serve as a model for your peers to see what great looks like. She said, you truly were a hero. Many times when we are faced with danger, we don't know what to do, and you instinctively did the right thing. The problem is the report from Apache.com doesn't really say what Caleb Morris did to deal with this aggressive groundhog. They report that back on July 19th, a woman was confronted by an aggressive groundhog on a trail behind the Bernard's Township Police Department. Morris, who happened to be nearby, immediately recognized the danger and did not hesitate to offer his help. The proclamation says Caleb Morris displayed remarkable courage and quick thinking in coming to the aid of the individual in distress, and his actions exemplify the highest standards of community spirit and bravery. Anna Duarte McCarthy, who's a committee woman, said that what you did was not think about the danger. You had the presence of mind. You exhibited bravery, and you just stepped in to help. This just demonstrates that you have wonderful character, and your family tonight has, I am sure, instilled some of those values, and it's something that everyone can be proud of. She continued saying that you are an asset to our community. You're a role model to your peers. Listen, I'm not throwing shade at Caleb Morris. I just would like to know what exactly he did to deal with that aggressive groundhog. Did he pick up a stick and wag it at the groundhog, allowing the woman to get away? Did he deliver a well-timed kick to the aggressive groundhog and saw it scurry off into the bushes? We don't know. Inquiring minds do want to know what Caleb Morris did, but I guess the big picture, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help someone in need from an aggressive groundhog. They do have some pretty big claws at times and some really big teeth, too. I just wish I knew what specific actions Caleb Morris had taken, but whatever they were, I appreciate what he did, and tip of the hat for that very good deed. Tip of the cap as well to John Petrolino again for sharing that story. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program here. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow as well. Not sure who we'll be talking to or what the subject matter will be, but I'm pretty sure. In fact, I guarantee we'll be talking about your right to keep and bear arms, how we can protect, preserve it, and defend it from the numerous threats that our rights are facing right now. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, too. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, as well as rebutting some of the more insipid anti-2A commentary that is out there. And boy, there is a lot of it these days. So again, just check it out at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. When you use the promo code FIGHT, I believe the sale is still going on, you can get 60% off of your VIP or VIP Gold membership. That is an incredible savings. You'll get all kinds of benefits, including exclusive content and ad-free experience and more. So again, use the promo code FIGHT Become a VIP or VIP member. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.